Good afternoon, everybody. It's Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me today on I Don't Care with, sure, me, Kevin Stevenson. So today's guest is Stuart Long. Stuart is the CEO of Infobionic. Stuart, welcome to I Don't Care. How are you?
Great to be here. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, tell everybody in my audience a little bit about you and a little bit about Infobionic, sure. Because I find it very fascinating. I've had a chance to look at your webpage. And a lot of really interesting stuff going on.
Well, it certainly is, for sure, especially in cardiovascular. So a little bit about me. I've been involved in healthcare pretty much all my life. My mom was a nurse. I've been surrounded by nurses and physicians my whole life. So I grew up, I've been in the business side about 30 years now. And so I know I'm pretty, dating myself there quite a bit, but have been around for a lot of the first. So I went, I go way back from switching from, film to the digital world in healthcare. From manual charts to electronic charts to manual insulin dosing to letting a computer predict how to do that for staff. And here we are, Infobionic, and we were the first company to put cardiac monitoring in the cloud.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I think you and I are about the same age because I remember all those too. That's a little frightening. Can't believe 30 plus years has gone by that quickly.
Yeah.
It's amazing all the changes that have happened in healthcare too.
It is.
That's been really fascinating to watch.
And if Moore's Law has anything to do with it, we'll see 30 years of evolution in the next 10, right? So.
Right. Absolutely. So talk a little bit about Infobionic and what you're doing in the cardiac monitoring world.
So we have a device that if you're a patient, if you've known anybody, any of your family members, if you're having some symptoms, it could be heartburn, could be dizziness, it could be a variety of things, skipping of the heart. Some people feel the outward signs of heart problems differently. But if you're having that to the degree that you talk to your doctor, the doctor will say, well, that does sound like it's something we need to figure out what's going on. It might be on the electrical side of your heart, not on the plumbing side, kind of like electricity and plumbing for your house. So on the electrical side, he'd say, let's put a monitor on you. So either come to the office or we can have one mailed to you. And you would either put that on yourself or go to the doctor. They'd put it on for you. And then you'd go home and we would monitor you remotely. And so what we do differently than a lot of folks is we stream your data up to the cloud. We use some really good FDA approved artificial intelligence to help the physicians not only see the data quicker because we can get it off of you and back to them, but then we can help them get to the do you have a problem or not have a problem much sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. You're kind of in my wheelhouse here because I've had a number of family members with cardiac issues and many that have been monitored long-term. Had a good friend of mine very recently, was on a monitor and went to take a remote job elsewhere. He was down in Florida and received a call from his cardiologist and said, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing different right now? Something's not right.
Yeah.
And he said, well, he told him what he was doing in that job. He goes, I think you need to find a new job because the stress level that's creating is putting some undue stress on his heart. Ended up coming back home, had a procedure. He's doing great.
Yeah.
But you know what? The physician found out very quickly and told him to change his lifestyle, and he was smart enough to do that. So, which kind of leads me into this whole thing. We just went through kind of a pretty stressful week, let's say, huh? Mm-hmm. With the election, whichever side you're on, and on both. And, that's one thing that, I've seen in my career in hospital administration, stress will, stress can kill you and stress puts incredible strain on your heart. You may not even know it, but it does. And so let's talk a little bit about that, heightened stress, anxiety. What does that do to the heart?
Absolutely. I think, it's interesting when you talk about we're in the same wheelhouse, you know, people who this has happened to. And right. So the cardiovascular disease incident rate is close to 50% at least in the population. So there's two of us on the call. So one of us has felt it, right? So it's really prevalent and it's really has to do a lot of with how it all starts, right? And, stress, anxiety are big contributing factors, especially if you have hereditary traits that might lead you to that point or lifestyle choices, right? So You know, if you look at the plumbing side of the heart, plaque is a big problem that gets built up into the vein. It's a big leader to heart attacks. But it's, if you think about all the food that you put in your mouth, if you didn't brush your teeth, you know, the dentist would have something to say about that, right? But we can't brush the inside of our house, our heart. So we have to, you know, we have to make some really good choices early on. But stress and anxiety, you know, even with food alone, we eat to relax and reduce stress. But if the input of that food is not heart healthy, if, you know, it's not the kind that brushes the inside of your heart, that those all have compounding effects. And the longer you leave it untreated or you don't get it diagnosed early enough, like the colleague, your example, they found it early enough, they did the procedure and everything's fine. If you leave it just a little bit too long, in some cases, sometimes it can go the other way. And stress has a big impact on that.
As I said, you know, just for the physician to be able to get that information so much quicker, you know, saves heart muscle, you know, saves, you know, hopefully long-term damage, you know, if you can get something done pretty quickly. But you know, going back to you know, infobionic, you know, you're talking, you know, a lot of my guests have been talking about AI. So yeah, it gets it to the cardiologist sooner. But what else does it do to the, you know, to that data, scrubbing it, cleaning it, you know, and all that? Because that's what I'm finding with a lot of my other guests. You know, they say, you know, it not only it advances, you know, the process, it, you know, makes it much more efficient, but it's so much more effective. Let's talk a little bit about that.
When we talk about AI, there's really a couple of different kinds. I kind of put them in two big buckets. One is just workflow efficiency, making it easier, assembling. Your heart beats over 100,000 times a day. If you're on the monitor for, you know, 14 days or 30 days, that's millions of heartbeats. So we need to make it easy for the clinicians who now are getting that data through the cloud. It's streaming. 100% of those heartbeats are coming through. How could you possibly look at a million heartbeats? You can't. So we have to make the information available to them much more cogent, and we have to prioritize that in such a way that we bubble the important stuff up to the very top. So that's one way we use AI to do the efficiency piece. I guess I'll back up to the very beginning. One of the most important things is that old adage, garbage in, garbage out. So we take whatever we get from the heart, because in the remote environment, it's very difficult because you're moving all the time. You're not stationary like you are in a hospital. So what we figured out was how to do some fairly sophisticated signal processing on some very noisy information. And then we were able to train that data using machine learning, which is a form of artificial intelligence, and then create algorithms to help assess once that signal gets cleansed and what it's looking at to kind of sift through the noise. And I'll give you a couple tidbits here. Okay. We did a look at atrial fibrillation, which is the most common arrhythmia, you know, that's out there, number one.
And got a close family member that has it.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. It's the most prevalent, and it's very expensive to treat. And if you don't find it early enough, right, to that point we made earlier, it has a very high, what we call comorbidity rate. So it has a high impact and a very high cost, right, to go with that. So we did an analysis where we were able to take, we put three different wires on the patient, and that creates three little squiggly lines. Now, if you put one wire on a patient, you'll get one squiggly line. So we have three little lines that go by. So we mathematically were able to recreate three additional squiggly lines. So a total of six, right? So the gold standard is 12. That's what you get in the hospital. So now we've created six. We use our world-class signal processing with machine learning, and we get an exceedingly high, really high quality signal. And so we're known for that. So we actually can achieve very close to inpatient monitoring level quality signal. Okay. And in this particular instance, what we found was in the six squiggly lines, we have like a noise canceling headphones effect. When there's a lot of noise in five of those lines, one of them would be just normal, and we can see through the noise that way. So it's really impressive to be able to use the technology. And what we found was in atrial fibrillation, there's a high incidence of false positives. So you take the Apple Watch and it says you might have a problem. Well, there's the incidence of that being wrong is very high, right? So that's a false positive. Right. And what we found after instituting the analysis of creating this noise canceling effect, we reduced the atrial fibrillation false positives by over 85%. And so that's the power of where AI comes in. And I'll make one last final point where we've collaborated with the Mayo Clinic on this. And one of the chief physicians at Mayo Clinic, you know, his quote was, the most important thing we can do is see what's happening at the time that it actually occurs. So we're working with them to bring to market their research that they do in AI for ECG. And so that what they've set as their charter is to detect latent disease much, much sooner. And so they're using your ECG now to look at other factors that are going on, other parts of your body, whether it's high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, other things, and puts all those together, and it can detect and have a high degree of accuracy, I'll say, in terms of predicting whether you're going to have atrial fibrillation, cardiomyopathies, or some other kind of thing. Sure. So to try to detect earlier. So we're working with them right now. They've got approval on their first algorithm. We're working with them to bring that to market on they did that on a 12 squiggly lines, 12 lead. We're going to get that approved for 6 lines and do it in a remote world so that we can now start detecting diseases much, much sooner and be able to give information to the clinicians that they might normally have to send the patient to the hospital to get an ultrasound, to get a blood test. Now you wouldn't have to do those things.
Okay. You know, you brought up something because my family member, you know, obviously the AFib is very sporadic. And you know, it may not occur for, you know, 2 or 3 days. And it's a very, you know, very quick event. But when you said that, I'm like, yeah, you know, being able to detect it when it happens, because, you know, there were a couple of times that she was on some monitoring and everything was great. Sure. I mean, nothing happened, you know, for a significant period of time. And then pretty much as soon as she got off the monitor, it's like, oh, you know, I had an episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
So being able to detect that and clear through that noise and really, you know, narrow it down to exactly when it happens and see that immediate impact. Yeah.
It's really important. It's probably the key, one of the key elements, I think, in terms of what we call now continuous monitoring, right? It's continuous monitoring has been around for a while. And I have a personal story. I have what we call paroxysmal atrial fibrillation. It comes, you know, I didn't have AFib, but I had, you know, this intermittent, very high heart rate. And they said, hey, you know what? That's going to turn to AFib at some point. Let's just watch you. So I have a monitor I keep with me, you know, nearby at all times. And so it finally turned to AFib, but we were able to detect it. And now, you know, it's all early detection. And so I think that the idea that being able to monitor continuously, but even though your arrhythmia is intermittent, you have to be able to capture what they call the burden. How often were you in that arrhythmia during the time that you weren't it? And so there's all sorts of statistics that the doctors rely on to say, if the burden is at a particular level, we need to act now or change your medication, or we don't have to do anything. We can keep you on the current path that we're on. We'll just watch and wait, which is kind of where the bucket I landed. But having that information coming off of you and in front of a doctor as little as 3 minutes, with that amount of information being, you know, factored in with the artificial intelligence and the analytics, so the doctor doesn't have to really decipher too much very quickly. We can kind of present it. They can look at it, make their determination like that.
See, you know, and you talk about, you know, continuous monitoring. Hey, who among us doesn't have, you know, the CGM now for their glucose?
Yeah.
You know, I got one, you know, and I've gotten, you know, so used to it now. You know, I play with it on my phone. Okay, let's see. What did I eat? Holy cow, don't eat that anymore.
Almost gamification, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so I'm sure, you know, with folks who are continuously monitoring their heart, it's great because it can allow you, hey, I'm feeling a little bit stressed. You know, let's take it down a notch.
Yep.
Or, you know, if I'm in the middle of some sort of an exercise, like, you know.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because I wear a watch, Fitbit, and I track all my stuff. And so does my wife. And so she was late to the game with the smartwatch. But she finally I didn't try to convince her, but she got to the party late. However, if you interact with your watch and confirm when it detects something, it gets smarter. And it's become a real tool for her to do exactly what you just said. You either need to slow down, or today you can push it a little bit. Or did I just eat something and I'm feeling something in my chest? Did I eat something wrong? So it answers a bunch of questions. And so it's been really beneficial for her. And I think that when it comes, and it's specifically around, you know, kind of managing stress and anxiety, it'll stop and tell her, did you just have a stressful moment? And she'll stop and look at it and go, what happened? I just had a phone call or a work call, right? To differentiate between walking or versus your elevated heart rate when you're kind of in a resting state, just kind of walking around your house. So So, you know, I think those are all great ways when you think about the tools that are available to us in continuous monitoring. It's not just cardiac. Okay. It's just kind of yourself, you know, quantified individual to some degree. We're all getting used to that in these days. And online meetings, you know, we never would have these.
Right. Who'd have thought? Yeah. Hey, so how does your technology, you know, how does this work and improve health equity and access? Because, you know, that is such an issue. Obviously, you know, I'm here in Texas. You know, we're very fortunate, blessed with, you know, significant access. We're in a larger city, but, you know, I can go 25 miles west of here and, you know, you start to see the access points just plunge. You got into West Texas and it may be 50, 75 miles to the nearest doctor. How can this help with equity and access?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great question. And I think it's probably one of the best enabling technologies for health equity, because there's a lot of scenarios where, you know, the insurance companies, they have a lot to say about which tests you can do and when.
Right.
And what are the symptoms for that test? And oftentimes they require that you do a 2-day or a 1-day monitor. And if it's negative, okay, then we'll move you on to a different monitor. So, that generally creates, if you're a rural patient, some people will drive a couple hundred miles to the nearest tertiary care center that has the technology. They'll have to either get a hotel and wait the period out. If they can't do that, then they have to turn and drive home. It's negative. They got to turn and come back and get a different monitor. And so, that makes the availability much more different. Now in our world, our monitor only does one kind of monitoring. We can do all of the tests that are required by the insurance companies on one monitor, and it can be mailed home to you. So speaking of Texas, we've got a distribution center and an office down in Texas, just south of Fort Worth. And so if there are some rural folks in Texas that are having these issues, you can even have a telehealth visit with your physician. They can call us up. We can have, or the doctor, we can ship a device to them. They put it on themselves. And then when they're done, they package it up and ship it back. Meanwhile, they're being monitored, you know, in near real time, and somebody's on the other end of that wire watching.
That's always an issue that jumps up to me. You know, I have a real passion for rural healthcare too. I spent some time out in you know, rural confines of Nebraska and Kentucky. And so that's great to hear about that. So let's shift a little bit. Of course, you know, I creeped you on LinkedIn because that's what I do. You know, I got to find out more about you. And I see one of the positions you have listed is mentor, and mentoring is something that is really near and dear to my heart. You know, I was the president of the American College of Healthcare Executives North Texas chapter a few years back. We're known throughout the country for our mentorship program. So, you know, again, and here in my current hospital, I oversee all of our administrative residents at our local university. And so, you know, I get a chance to you know, spend what little wisdom I have left in my brain to a lot of folks.
Forward, yeah.
So what do you do? You know, how did you get involved in mentorship? And tell me a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. So it started, a long time ago. There was a company that reached out to me. It's kind of like a dating service. You sign up for free with them, and you know, to be part of their mentor program. And so then they sign up with companies, and then those companies will say, I have these employees. They can either be top performers or mid performers or even low performers that would need some help. And so based on the company's needs and that particular employee's needs, they'll match a mentor based on skill sets, but it's never in the same industry. And so I've been doing that for, it's probably now more than 10 years. I'm not quite sure, but it's something that I'm deeply passionate about and I truly enjoy. I have a mentor, multiple mentors myself. So I've always believed that there's, you know, people have blazed a trail and done great things, and we can learn from all the wisdom of those that have gone before us and been successful and people have learned how to make mistakes and overcome them. Right. So there's that element that's, you know, the path to success is littered with failure. Right. So I've been doing that and I absolutely love it. I learn more, I think, than I teach. So I kind of go in with that mindset, to learn really about what it is that drives them and what do they want to do and how do they think they can get there, and then what skill sets or what knowledge. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you just said something that I tell everybody that's interested in mentoring and they haven't done it before. Say, look, you're going to get so much more out of it than you put into it.
I learned that, yeah, you know, Yeah, for sure.
So in our last couple of minutes, anything more that you'd like to touch on with InfoBionic? Obviously you got the cardiac monitoring down. Are you thinking about going into some other monitoring maybe down the road?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. There's a lot of tangential things around what we do. Sleep monitoring is sleep apnea is very critical to atrial fibrillation, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
Glucose control, cardiovascular disease, they go hand in hand, diabetes. There's a lot of monitoring that can be tangential and associated to that. But I think if I look at our horizon just in the next 36 months with our collaboration with the Mayo Clinic, we're going to focus on trying to bring as many algorithms that can be detected in your ECG. Believe it or not, there's a lot hidden in that electrical signal that we never knew existed. And that's what one of the things that the AI does, and Mayo is a big researcher on that, to bring all of those things that you can detect in the heart without having to go get these other tests and see how early we can detect it. And that starts, that moves us up in towards the hospital space and trying to get people out faster. But at the same time, we need to get your blood pressure. We got to get your blood oxygen. We've got to do some other vital signs. We need to be able to communicate on video. We need to be able to have a form factor that can start in a hospital and go all the way out to your wrist, depending on where you are and what your, how complex your care is. So I think you'll see us stay true to our nature, but probably those kind of, rings on the bullseye as we go out from the center, we lean towards those markets like sleep and other kinds of continuous monitoring that are correlations to cardiovascular disease that aren't necessarily thought of as cardiovascular.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit. I'll let you give a little commercial here. Who are your main customers now? If somebody listening to my podcast here wants to get more information on InfoBionic, how can they do that?
Yeah, well, I'll maybe see it first and when we close, but the website, easy way to find us, is infobionic.ai. In fact, we renamed the company to that exact name. So it's not only our name, it's our website. But I'd say, we're known for our quality. And if I had anything for the listeners, if it's a consumer or a patient, is talk to your doctor, talk to them about continuous monitoring. We were first to market about 8 years ago with continuous monitoring in the cloud, but you can't not get it in today's world. So there's you can't really get a bad monitor, although there's different kinds that don't communicate. I'd say shy away from those. The more squiggly lines, the better. But there are use cases like AFib where one lead patch that you can stick on and wear it is perfectly fine. And so I'd say just talk to your doctors, because I think, in that world where patients are educated and want to talk to their clinicians, I can tell you my wife, she was at the doctor, she had some test results come in, and she saw them on her phone before the doctor got back to the room. So that's how fast, that's the speed at which it can really help. And the consumer, and still she joked, it's like, I got my results before you got here, just a little to poke them. But that's the power that the patient and the consumer have today, is to help drive their own healthcare. And I'd say that's really the biggest thing, because a rising tide floats all boat. We all benefit from that. And kind of our charter is think about the patient first.
Well, very good. Well, Stuart Long with InfoBionic.ai. I'll give the correct company name. Sorry about that.
No.
It's been a real pleasure having you on. I don't care today with me. And look forward to hearing more from you. Love to have you back on the show. Maybe a year or 2 years down the road, hear more about your Mayo collaboration, but also hear more about new products.
Happy to come back. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. Another great episode of I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. I hope you've enjoyed it today. Tune in again next week for yet another great guest on I Don't Care. Have a good week.